Well, my name is Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Mark.
Thank you very much for inviting me here today. Whoever was responsible, I put together some pictures, and yesterday I was going through old pictures, and it took me a while to do it, and it was like, wow. I saw pictures I hadn't looked at in years. So I picked out a few things. And they're in chronological order, and it really helped me realize and look at those and realize the up and down nature of my disease. If I look at me in certain periods, I'm size wise pretty normal, and then a couple years later I'm different, and then a couple years later I'm normal size wise, then I'm different. And in the last pictures are there, and in the orange shirt you'll see that was pretty recent, and that was pretty much about a year before I walked into my first OA meeting. So it's pretty interesting. That first picture is me. It's the best subject, you know. I grew up in an alcoholic home, like I suspect a few of you might have, and with two very loving parents, you know, very loving parents, and the thing that I remember growing up as a kid is just being really held. I was the oldest of four. You know, when I was born, the family lore had it that my mother had like five miscarriages before she had me. And so when I finally came out and was a successful baby, you know, the prince had been born, and here I was, you know. And so as the oldest of these children, we really had two sets of kids, and my sister is 17 months younger, and then another sister 7 years later, and a brother 11 years later. He was sort of an afterthought. So we have two different, two different families. But I grew up in the Catholic Church, and with a mother who was really open-minded. She was so far ahead of her time. Really gave me permission to establish a relationship with a higher power, regardless of that really strict, dark doctrine. You know, I would come home from a little Sunday school catechism and say, you know, they told me this and this. She said, oh, honey, that... Essentially, she came up, she was the first person, as I look back on it, to give me the concept of take what you like and leave the rest. And so that combined with my father, who was this 6'4", World War II macho man with a reputation for violence, but he called me sweetie until the day he died. So there's this juxtaposition there. But he took me out into the woods. He gave me this connection with nature. And so between those two, I had a wonderful, wonderful relationship with God early on in my life. But that was really important. There's a picture in there, a black and white shot. It looks like I'm in the Arctic with a beard, and that picture is taken off the coast of North Vietnam in the bowels of an aircraft carrier, and during the Christmas bombings of 1972, and that's a pinpoint point in my life when I can really, when my that relationship with my higher power was fractured, and it didn't come back to me. For 25 years, when I found my way into the rooms of Al-Anon in 1997. It's a long time to be kicking around without a higher power. And I did a lot of up and down with my weight, but I also did a lot of up and down with my behavior, and did a lot of damage out there to myself and to others. And so I'm just so grateful for the 12 steps to bring me back into that contact. my earliest food stuff, you know, I remember being in Boise, Idaho as a teenager, riding my bike downtown to house sit, and past just before the house was a bakery and a donut shop, and I would, you know, grab a dozen donuts and go into that house. And needless to say, I needed to be at that house quite a bit. And you know, those donuts, the dozen donuts, never made it back to my house in Idaho. I think I was probably 13 or 14 at that time. So the sugar deal was in me. I remember stealing sugar and getting into trouble early on as a kid on Halloween. I remember having the biggest disaster of my life was having my Halloween candy stolen, this big, huge bag of candy, which I just was distraught for months after that. But, you know, it just goes up and down. It's just who I am. And I got to the point, I spent 23 years on the East Coast in Nantucket. I owned a restaurant, a pizza restaurant, for 23 years. And I had just, food was my business, you know. And I did pretty well, but I would get up to a certain weight, and then I would diet and exercise down, and then I would go up and down and up and down. And it was about, it was in 2013, after being in Al-Anon for a very long time, I was back in Seattle working, and I'm lying in my bed. And because of my prayer meditation work that I was doing, and I was doing my prayer meditation work, I could hear a voice distinctly say to me, you know, you are in serious trouble. And I listened to that voice. You know, nothing. I don't believe there are too many accidents in this world. And I was living in a home here on Capitol Hill, and with two people that I knew, and there were some other roommates in the house. And two of the roommates were members of Overeaters Anonymous. One day I went down and to the kitchen, and I'm sitting at the table having my breakfast, and my other housemate's over in her corner chopping her vegetables for her, you know, chop for her lunch, and there was a copy of Lifeline on the counter on the kitchen table, and I picked it up for some reason, and you know, I read my story in there in Lifeline, and it was unbelievable. I said to her, I said, "Hey," I go, "What?" She goes, I just read my story in here. And she turned around, this little grin. She says, "Welcome," you know, as if she's been waiting for me for, you know, I've been living there for a long time, you know. And you know, I'm so grateful for that that day. This person is also responsible for getting me to go to a big book study, and I have been doing that all along. And part of what happened to me is in that big book study. You know, I was, you know, many, many, many years in Al-Anon, and you know, I had worked the big book steps a few times through that program, but really hadn't done a deep dive into the big book. And this particular big book study starts in January and ends in November, and covers the first 164 pages. So it's a deep dive. We spent a long time on the first step, and in the room, about 25 or 30 people. You know, I was there were a lot of OA members there. There were a lot of AA members there. There were a lot of dual members there. But I was, you know, the only Al-Anon in the room. And but then when people were telling their first step experiences around alcohol, I didn't really relate. But when the OA members in that room started talking about their food, I went, huh. So that was like, took me 4 months for those, that layer of denial to get stripped off in that big book study. And finally, I was able to get to that point where I was able to acknowledge that possibly I belong to in that group. I went to my men's retreat that weekend right after I read that article in Lifeline and started telling the truth to the men that I've known at this Al-Anon retreat for years for the very first time. And I marked that weekend as the, I like to say that, you know, I was telling you the truth about everything but my food. And it was very emotional for me to go there, and guys that you don't see, you haven't seen, you know, all year, show up at that retreat. Hey, how's it going? Well, here's what's, you know, I just told, start telling the truth. The reaction was amazing because I had men break into tears in front of me and get very emotional because I was telling the truth for the first time. And so I came back from that weekend and that Sunday, and I walked into the house, and my housemate sitting on a couch with her husband, and it's a sunny day, and I said, well, I said, I'm ready to go. When's the next OA meeting? And she kind of chuckled. She said, it's in about 2 hours. So I walked into the Sunday Ravenna meeting, that June weekend in 2012, I think. And I've been coming ever since. On our drive home, she gave me the idea that possibly it would be a good idea to some members write their food down and share it with somebody every day. And so she said just some basic ideas about abstinence that seemed to work for some people. She didn't say for you, just for some people. Write the food down. No sugar, which I thought, huh. No white flour. 3 meals a day. Nothing in between, maybe a snack, and nothing after the last meal. And get rid of any, and try to start to identify problem foods that would, you know, that cause you to binge or overeat. So the next morning, I must have been ready because I was at my bottom, and that's why it works for me. I was totally ready. The next morning I started writing out my food, and I said, well, who the hell do I give this to? And so I said, oh, well. So I just went over to her. She has a little office, and I went over to her computer. We had these little strips of note paper in the kitchen. I would write them out in my pencil and say, I would label it Mark's meal plan. And it was like, I don't know why it would be anybody else. I mean, it was like, why would I write that? But I did. And I put it on her computer every day. And that's how I started with that. And I don't know if she read them. I doubt it. But anyway, that's what I did. It was very important because it was like a prayer. I wrote it down. It was for me. It was a prayer to me, a prayer to my higher power. It was like a commitment to somebody else. I shared it with somebody else, and it was part of the step work that I was doing. Now the other housemate got involved too. She was delighted, I'm sure, that I was finally found where I needed to be. She's not here today. One of them is, but. She gave me a list of men. Says, "Hey, here's some guys that you might want to call." So I called this one guy, and I thought I was calling a local guy. And he answers the phone, and I talked to him, and I thought he was local, but it turns out he was living in Arizona. But he had 206. He had cell phone, 206 cell phone. Anyway, I asked him if he would help me work the steps in OA, and this was like day 4. He said, yeah, he'd do that. So he started giving me assignment. He says, do you know anything about the 30 questions? And I said, no. He says, well, here, look it up. So I looked it up, and of course everybody else, the other two people in my house, knew about these. And he said, okay, I want you to find them and answer the first question and then call me tomorrow at 3:00. I said, okay, I can do that. So I found him, wrote it, called him, told them the question, and we did that every day for 30 days. and that's how we worked the first three steps in OA. And then we got to the four-step questions, and he said, okay, are you familiar with the four-step questions? And I said, no. He says, okay. So he showed me where they were, and there's 160 of them. And we started doing that, and God damn it. It was like one a day, and I just worked it that way. And I said, finally, how about, two-thirds of the way through, I said, what? Why are we doing this? This is crazy. I mean, it's like, why every day? He says, let me ask you a question, Mark. I go, what? He says, are you thinking about the food? I said, no. He says, all right, keep writing. So that happened, and I worked it all the way through with him, and we did it every day. And you know what? I worked a lot of four steps in various ways in various years, and that was an incredible four-step. That was the most revealing four-step to me that I've ever worked. And I told him three or four take-it-to-the-grave stuff that I've never told anybody. And somehow that kind of washed over. It just scraped it up, and that worked. So I find that to be extremely important. And then he had to stop sponsoring me, so I got another sponsor right away. And I've been working the steps, and then it was in conjunction with that, I've been working the steps in the Big Book study. For like 3 years, I did that with the Big Book study. And I miss it this year. We're taking a year off, and I'm kind of jonesing for that group. But anyway, that's kind of what my story is. I am so grateful to be here. There's pictures of the drumming stuff going on, and that's a huge revelation that I was even able to do anything like that. Time is what?
Not about 5 minutes.
Oh, good. So it's really indicative of my recovery spiritually. Music to me, I was always a great appreciator of music. But in terms of performance and even playing a music instrument, I never did that. And about 6 years ago, I three of my friends from Al-Anon guys invited me to an open mic night, and they were performing. They put together three songs, and they were performing. And I went out for coffee with them afterwards, and they said, geez, we really need a percussionist, and it could really use some rhythm in there. I said, well, that's for sure. You really can. And and they said, do you ever play the drums? And I said, well, I was in a drum and bugle corps in fourth grade. And they said, you're our new drummer. So I started out with a cajon, which is a little box you sit on. It's an African instrument. And then we started doing these open mic stuff, and God, we would work for weeks to get three songs together. And then we needed a cowbell. We're doing a Creedence Clearwater song. And so we needed a cowbell. So I went down to Guitar Center to buy a cowbell. And I ran into this guy, and he said, what do you play? I said, I play the cajon. He says, let me show you my setup. So I go over to the corner, and he's got this cajon with a foot pedal back here, and then he's got a small snare off a cymbal stand and a couple of cymbals up here. I went, holy crap, that's exactly what I need. So it's $800 later or something. I walk out of Guitar Center, and I've started my new adventure on a totally different way of playing, and being abstinent helped me, because I would never have attempted anything like that. It's very difficult at 63. Or whatever I was at that point, 60, for me, it was like, holy crap. So I had to relearn what I, how I do stuff. And the band was so patient, because by this time we have gigs, right? I mean, we're famous in the geezer circuit. And now we've graduated to farmers markets. And I really can't go down to Kent and Auburn without getting mobbed. So, I mean, Yeah, so humor, So we have today. I now today the last picture was taken this morning. I have a folk drum kit, and I'm learning how to play it. And we have last summer I took my drum kit out with a band, and it was like walking on a tightrope without a net. I mean, it was like I don't really know what I'm doing yet. But I have a drum instructor. It's the same guy that showed me the cowbell. You know, it all circles around. I just was open to that kind of growth and open to that kind of joy that playing music with three other guys can bring. I know that there's some musicians in here that understand that. So anyway, it's a metaphor for my birth, right? My rebirth as a human being, and it's because of this program that I can fully appreciate that and not run away from it, not run away from that love, all that love, and all that challenge. So thanks for what I got.